Okay, we traditionally on Tisha B'Av afternoon have a shiur in Hilchot Avilut, looking at a particular aspect of the halachot. We're limited somewhat in what we can learn today. So this year we're looking at a subject we haven't dealt with before, I don't think, and that's the din of Avilut for a katan. Sometimes it happens that a young child loses a parent or another relative, and then there are a whole host of questions which come up, one of which is to what degree are they bound by the laws of Avilut. I have to tell you, as congregational rabbi, there's always two aspects, two dimensions to that question. One is the strict halachic aspect, and there's also the pastoral dimension as well. That's in terms of what's going to be in the child's best interests in terms of their emotional sense and the trauma that they're going through, and that of course will depend on the age that they are. I had one case some years ago where a person died, a person I think in his 40s, early 50s maybe, left young children, and the family decided that it wasn't appropriate they should go to the funeral, and that's a fair decision to make. They were just going to have the children go to school that day as normal, and it's rare as a rabbi you want to sort of muscle in and tell people you can't do this, matters in their private lives, but I insisted that they took the children out of school for the afternoon of the Levaya. I just otherwise 10-20 years down the road, that's you have the the children just being traumatized by the fact that they were told, your father's died, and carry on as if nothing's happened, you go to school and play. We're reading now about the traumas that Prince Harry has had over the course of the past 20 years. It's a slightly different situation, but certainly I've learned that you need to be very sensitive and thoughtful about the emotional well-being of the children involved, as well as the halachic well-being alongside. Let's start off. This is a subject, interestingly, which is not discussed in the Gemara. It's funny because we spoke this morning about the din of tefillin on Tisha B'Av, and we pointed out that the din of tefillin on Tisha B'Av is not discussed in the Gemara. This also is not discussed in the Gemara. The best we have is a Gemara in Moed Katan, Perek Elam Megalchin, one of the prakim we can learn on Tisha B'Av, which tells us in the dinim of Kriya, there's a whole page there which discusses the laws of Kriya. The Gemara tells us in Mekarin LeKatan Mipnei Agmat Nafesh. So you do Kriya for a child, meaning if a child is as lost a close relative, mipnei agmat nafesh, because in order to cause a sense of distress. And what the Rishonim explain, what's this agmat nafesh that we're talking about, the sense of distress, is that it should be marbeh the hesped, that everybody's looking around, they're about to start the hespedim, and then somebody comes from the Chevra Kaddisha, and you've got a three-year-old child there, and they come and they do kriya on the clothes of a three-year-old who's clearly bewildered by what's going on. And that obviously heightens the sense of avilut that is present. Now, the Tor cites this and then quotes from the Rigeat. So Katan Shemek Lomek Makarin Lomit Pneagmat Nafesh Perush Kedela Harbot Behesped, so to increase the sense of anguish that is around and to heighten the Hespedim. Katav Haritz Geat Vim Higia Lechinuch Korin Lo Kederch Shemachankin or Tola Shar Mitzvot. If the child has reached the age of Chinuch, so then we do Chinuch, we do Kriya for him, just as we was under the rubrics of chinuch. So what we seem to have here is that the Gemara is talking about, certainly according to the understanding of the Rigeat, that the Gemara is talking here about a case of a katan who is not yet reached the age of chinuch. Now the age of chinuch will depend on what mitzvah we're talking about. The mitzvah of the age of chinuch for fasting on Yom Kippur is 10 or 11. The age of chinuch for tzitzit is much younger. So every mitzvah has its own age of chinuch depending on how the child can interact with that mitzvah. But so we've got, say, a 3 or 4 year old child here who clearly can't interact properly with mitzvot. So there's no din of chinuch in terms of the mitzvah of kriya. Nevertheless, it could be even younger, a 2 year old, certainly not able to do kriya. That's, so we've got a din beyond the mitzvah of kriya, that because of agmat nefesh, you have to do kriya for them. Once they've reached the age of chinuch, so then it falls under a different rubric, and it's part of the mitzvah of chinuch that you do kriya for them. Now the question will be, what am I nafkamina? Who cares? You know, so you're doing kriya, whether it's midin agmat nefesh or whether it's midin chinuch, you're doing the same thing. So the answer is, you're not necessarily doing the same thing. There could be, I thought of 3 nafkaminas. One nafkamina will be in the shear of the kriya. Generally speaking, we say that the shear of kriya, how much of the garment you have to tear, that's a tefach, or if it's mourning parents, then it has to be ashim galelibo, down to your chest. So if it's mipnei agmat nafesh, if it's just because of to increase the sense of distress around, so the kara, you don't need to tear a full shear. You know, just the fact that something's coming along with a pair of scissors and cutting a wee child's garment, that is going to achieve agmat nafesh. So that would be nafkamina number one. Nafkamina number two would be perhaps a number of begadim that you need to do kriya on. Generally speaking, we say that if it's for avvaim, if you're mourning parents, then you have to tear all your garments. Your shirt and your jacket and your pullover, whatever it is. If it's for shakrovim, you only have to tear the beged elyon, the outermost garment. So if it's midin chinuch, a child has lost a parent, it's midin chinuch, then you have to do it in the proper way. You have to tear all of their garments. On the other hand, if it's midin agmat nafesh, then the chara, it's good enough just to tear one of the garments. And the third nafkamina would be that's if there's no real agmat nafesh, meaning that if it's for shakrovim, I understand this, for a child to lose a parent, so that is something which is very distressing, and that's why you want to increase the sense of agmat nafesh which is around. But if a child has lost a sibling, then, you know, in the contemporary context, that's usually very traumatic. If we think back to Talmudic times, where families were large and age ranges were spread out and women died in childbirth, so you could easily have you could easily be 4 years old and your half brother, who's 40 years old, has passed away. You hardly know them. You never grew up with them. They never lived locally. It was from your father's first wife who died in childbirth. And you're the last child of the second wife. That's so it's a sad situation for the person who dies. It's not necessarily a tragedy for the child who's lost a half brother. That's somebody they hardly know. So in that case, there probably wouldn't be agmat nafesh, in which case, if it's not midin chinuch, then there wouldn't be a need to do kriya. So in any event, those are the two models we'll have for kriya. Now we've got a principle that kriya l'chud v'avilut l'chud, that the din in which apply to kriya don't necessarily apply to avilut. For example, in Hilchot Avilut we have a principle, halacha k'divrei ha-mekel ba'evel, that where you've got a machloket in the Gemara and possibly in the Rishonim, that's what the halacha is. We follow the more lenient opinion. That's a din which applies to avilut. It's a din which doesn't apply to kriya. So the question will be, is there also a din of avilut mitam chinuch? So the drisha in one of the commentaries on the page of the Torah, the drisha in Simon Shin Mem, he quotes the Rigeat. He says, "Perush afilu heichad deleka be mishum agmat nafesh." So if there's a din of chinuch, then even if there's no issue of agmat nefesh, that's nevertheless there can still be a din of chinuch, and you still have to do a kriya. Umikan yesh raya ketzat, and from this we've got some sort of proof. Shekatan shegir lechinuch sarich linhog called in avilut, that a child who's reached the age of chinuch does have to observe avilut in its totality. That's now the lashon of the drisha is interesting. Mikan yesh raya ketzat. It's a sort of raya. It's not the best of proofs, but it would suggest that maybe, seeing as we're going to apply the din of kriya to a katan mitin chinuch, so we'll also apply the din of avilut to a katan mitin chinuch as well. That's the suggestion of the drisha, and it seems to be echoed by the Taz in Shulchan Aruch. The Taz also seems to think He quotes the Drisha and doesn't dissent from it, so it seems that the Taz paskins that way as well. However, most of the Achronim, certainly who discussed the topic, seem to be in disagreement, and they hold that there's no din of avilut for a katan. So I've identified seven reasons why there might not be avilut mitin chinuch for a katan. I want us to look at those and then look at a related question as well. So let's start off with the shach in the Nekudot HaKesef. Nekudot HaKesef is the shach's hasagot on the commentary of the Taz around the Shulchan Aruch. So the shach says as follows: Ulufi aniut da'ati nira. It seems to me to davka bikriya amrinan hachi. It's only as far as kriya that we say that there's a din of chinuch for a child. Tahakatav harosh sof perakelu megalchin machloket roa bo maharam usfarato. Now we're going to see this towards the end of the year, but there's an important machloket between the Rosh and his teacher, the Maharam Rutenberg, about whether or not a case where a katan loses a parent just before he reaches his 13th birthday, and then he becomes a gadol, he has his bar mitzvah during the shiva or during shloshim. So he, now he's reached adulthood, does he have to sit shiva and observe avilut or not? So that's a machloket between the Rosh and the Maharam. In a nutshell, the Maharam says he does. That it's the Maharam says it's like the case of a person who buries a relative on Chol HaMoed. They don't observe Shiva immediately, but they observe Shiva after Yom Tov. So here, he's buried the mate as a child, and he'll observe Avilut when he reaches adulthood. The Rosh disagrees, and the Rosh says no, there's no Avilut. It's like a person who was a child at the time of Pesach Rishon doesn't bring Korban, doesn't bring Pesach Sheni, because it's Tashlumin, Pesach Sheni is Tashlumin Larishon. It's you only bring Pesach Sheni if you couldn't bring Pesach Rishon. If you didn't have a Chiyuv, then you don't bring it. So in any event, the Shach says that as far as that Machloket, that we've got that Machloket, that Im Naaseh Ben Yud Gimul Sharab B'toch Zayin Yumei Avilut, Im Sarach Lin Hog Zayin Yumei Avilut. It becomes Bar Mitzvah during the Shiva. Alma Devodo Katan Pshita Dein Sarach Lin Hog Avilut. So we can infer from that that clearly if he's a Katan, he definitely doesn't have to observe Avilut. Because if he had to observe Avilut when he was a Katan, then this question wouldn't really arise. Now you can say maybe it would arise, that that's the whole question of, you know, if you do a mitzvah whilst you're a Katan, does that, you know, are you Yotzei when you become a Gadol? The classic question with that is regard to a Katan who becomes a Gadol during Sfirat HaOmer. He counted the first 33 days as a Katan, it now comes to the 34th day of the Omer. He's now a Gadol, he wants to say a bracha for Al Sfirat HaOmer, or he fulfilled the mitzvah of counting, but he was a katan. So is that going to help him or not? So that's part of the question there. Got a similar question with regard to a katan, summer Friday night. Katan, it's his Hebrew birthday on Shabbat Nachamu. So the whole family comes to shul Friday night. They go home, sit down, make kiddush, have dinner. And at 10 o'clock at night, it gets dark. Now, when he made kiddush, he wasn't didn't have a chiyuv. Does he need to make kiddush again? And so in some degree, the question, you know, with us every Friday night in the summer, we get so we make kiddush well before it's we've accepted Shabbat. So on a Drabbanan level, it's Shabbat. Midoraita, it's not Midoraita, it's not Shabbat. So you know, is the mitzvah that we did that's in a time frame when we didn't have an absolute chiyuv, is that going to be valid or not later? But certainly the Shach extrapolates from that, or infers from that machloket, that seeing as they're arguing about whether or not you need to observe Havilut later, the implication is that you don't need to observe Avilut earlier, and that if you're a Katan, you don't observe Avilut. He hasn't told us why not. He's just told us that he thinks that we don't. Now, there's a tshuva on the subject in the Igrot Moshe, where he quotes a number of views. We'll start off with him quoting the Nachal Eshkol. This is the Igrot Moshe, Pelet Yoradeh, first Chelek, Simon Reish Kaf Dalet. So he quotes the Nachal Eshkol, and the question that the Igrot Moshe is discussing is the Dinim Chinuch for Aveilut, and also for Tisha B'Av and the 3 weeks, etc. Does a Katan today have to sit on the floor to eat their breakfast, or wear non-leather shoes? That's, can you stop your 10-year-old son from having a shower? That's usually the question is the other way around. Can you get your 10-year-old son to take a shower? But can you stop your 10-year-old son taking a shower on Tisha B'Av? So he quotes Nachal Eshkol, who says, Shemitzvot haba'ot al yidei mikre, lo chayvu b'chinuch. So the Nachal Eshkol believes that a mitzvah which is just, it comes up randomly, but has no regularity to it, no certainty to it, there's no mitzvah of chinuch. So if I says, as far as Tisha B'Av is concerned, that's something which is pretty regular, comes up every year. We hope that it'll eventually become null and void, but until that time it's something which happens annually, and therefore there's a mitzvah chinuch. However, he posits that as far as regular Avilut is concerned, there wouldn't be a mitzvah chinuch, because that a person can go through their whole life and never be an Avel. A person could live to 70, and his parents, Kanein Ahara, are still alive, 94 and 96, and they pass away, and, you know, they've lost, they lived a long life, and they lost no relatives. They never observed Avelut throughout their entire life. The purpose of Chinuch, I suppose this is a chakira in, you know, what chinuch would be, is whether chinuch is just getting children to do mitzvot because that's, it's good that, you know, a Yiddish and a Shama should do mitzvot, or is it that it's being mechanic them, it's preparing them for what, towards mitzvah observance in this regard when they reach adulthood. That's presumably, that's the way most, you know, we usually understand it, and therefore there's no point preparing somebody for a mitzvah which they might never have to observe. You never have to observe a mitzvah, so, you know, you might not have to say, what's the point of doing chinuch? So seeing as it's not at all certain that they'll become aveilim, and even if they do, it's certainly not going to be on a regular basis, so therefore there would be no mitzvah of chinuch.
Well, there's too many mitzvahs. You might never eat truma.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure, is there a mitzvah of to be machil your child truma?
I see you don't have to teach about truma masa.
No, that's different. To be mafrish, being mafrish truma, it's nothing to do with eating truma. It's just I can't eat this produce till you've been mafrish.
Well, you don't necessarily have to have that if you're eating fruit which is not promoted, or whatever it is.
Fine, but number one, okay, so your question could be, if your child is eating fruit from Eretz Yisrael, which he hasn't taken trumas and masra from, do you have a din midin chinuch? Do you have to tell them to take trumas and masra? So possibly, maybe you don't. That's, but with a mitzvah, I mean, that's a mitzvah kiyumit, so it's a mitzvah that you can always choose to do. So a mitzvah kiyumit, you may as well say, why be mechanic them to wear tzitzit? They might never choose to wear mitzvah kiyumit. We encourage them to do mitzvah kiyumit. That's, whereas, you know, this is something which just is out of your hands. A second answer, Rav Moshe quotes it from the Beit Hillel. So the Beit Hillel is on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, the Siman Shin Pei Vav. That's the Beit Hillel actually quotes Rashi in Tanit, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Bet, where Rashi says very clearly that there's no din of Avilut for a child. The question is, why not? So the Beit Hillel says, Ha Avilut Yishana Hu Al Achurban, Devet HaMikdash, Shelo Haya B'Yameinu, Shigam Avilut HaGdolim Eino Al Chataehem. So as far as the Avilut for the Beit HaMikdash is concerned, it's about the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, which wasn't in our times, and therefore we're not responsible for it. It's true that Chazal tells us if the Beit HaMikdash wasn't rebuilt in our life, then it's if it was destroyed in our lives. That's not why we're fasting. We're fasting because it was once destroyed. That's relevant to Ketanim as well. V'af shekatav haRambam bereish perakei d'Tani yotshuv day lo orer halavavot liftach darchei hatshuva. Now the Rambam says the purpose of Taniot is to spur us to do teshuva. That's still shayach with regard to Tisha B'Av. The point that Beit Hillel makes, and it's clear in the actual text of the Beit Hillel on the Shulchan Aruch, is that Avilut, the purpose of Avilut, is an act of teshuva. When a person becomes an Avel, they have to do teshuva for themselves, that they've that this terrible event had happened to them, and also for the niftar. Some way they have to be hareini kaparat mishkavol. They have to try and do teshuva for the niftar. Teshuva is something which a katan can't do. A katan is not bar onshin. A katan doesn't have. They're not supposed to do aveirot. It's not good to do aveirot, but it's they're not culpable for anything that they do wrong, and therefore the notion of teshuva is not relevant to them. And avilut is an expression of teshuva, and therefore it's not appropriate to impose avilut on katanim. Rav Soloveitchik said a very similar idea. If you look in the bottom, Shurei HaRav, so he says, Nira the Haki Taima to Lekha Chinuch b'mitzvat avilut. He says, this is the reason why there's no din of chinuch. Mishum de ikarohu kiyum ha'balev. The main fulfillment of avilut is an emotional fulfillment. We go through lots of actions, and there are lots of things we can do or we must do, and things that we can't do as avilut. But it's not really about the actions. It's really about the sense you have, the emotional sense of distress that you have. And Rav Soloveitchik has a discussion about how important is bechi, is crying in avilut. If you just go through all the actions but you don't feel anything, that's have you had a proper experience of avilut? He says the proper experience of avilut is a kum belev, kumvav matin sanhedrin, the katan lav bar datu ve'inu mitzar el meitor. And a child doesn't have the intelligence to be able to, I'd say, properly be distressed about the loss that they've experienced. Now, of course, a child, you know, will often cry more than an adult will when they lose a close relative. They'll be more distressed, but the depth of their distress will be much less than that of an adult. An adult, when an adult loses a relative, they have a fuller sense of who they've lost. It's not just about them. A child loses a relative, so they've got nobody to take them swimming on a Sunday, or nobody to read them a story at bedtime, or whatever it might be. But it's all about them. It's I've got nobody to do this for me. I am left bereft. That's whereas an adult loses a relative, there's this kiyum shebalev, there's this sense of not just what I'm missing in a practical sense, what I'm missing in an emotional sense, and a sense of awareness of how the world is a poorer place because of the values that the person who's passed away represents, etc., etc. That's what the kiyum shebalev is of avilut. Quite simply, a child can't understand that, and therefore everything else is just the actions, but without any meaning, and therefore it's not shaykh to say there should be a din of avilut for a katan. He asked the question, how can it be then that we say there's a mitzvah simcha that's on Yom Tov for your children if that's also kiyum shebalev? He says essentially there's no mitzvah simcha for them mitam chinuch. It's a din on the father. Let's look at so that's a third answer. Sure.
Because in quite as well, it seems to me with the original Gemara. With the Gemara, we said that we do kriya because of Agmat Nefesh for a kosel.
No, but that's Agmat Nefesh. Who's feeling the Agmat Nefesh? Everybody else. Everybody else around. When you go to a levaya and you see a katan, there's a 4-year-old child there, and they do kriya. You come home and you say, "Oh, it was terrible." You know, they did kriya. You know, that's what you'll be talking about. You know, you're shaken by it. It's not the agmat nefesh of the katan. It's the agmat nefesh of everybody else. That's what the agmat nefesh is. So I think it does work. That's the third answer that the Ikrot Moshe brings down is from Dagul Mervava. Dagul Mervava is the Not of Yehuda. Dagul Mervava is his Harot on Shulchan Aruch. So he says that there's no mitzvah avilut of chinuch va'avilut mishum she'ein levat lamed divrei Torah. It's not appropriate to stop them learning. Hushach gam b'kan inyan Tisha B'Av. So that's also relevant as far as Tisha B'Av is concerned. Basically, the Not of Yehuda is saying is that avilut involves a whole range of things that you're not allowed to do. Not allowed to shower, you're not allowed to cut your hair, and you're also not allowed to learn Torah. So it's fine to tell the child that he can't house his hair and he can't have a shower. But to pull your kids out of cheder for the week, that seeing as it's only midin chinuch that they should do observe avilut, so why stop them learning Torah. That's, I mean, Torah is also Din Chinuch, it's also Vishinantam Levanecha. But why stop them learning Torah? It's all Chinuch, so it's better they should learn Torah than they shouldn't learn Torah. And therefore, we don't do mitzvot in halves. We couldn't say, okay, well, you're chayav in aveilut, that's except for Talmud Torah. Go to school, but everything else that you're not allowed to do. And Shah would probably say, that's the worst of all worlds. So therefore, there's no din of aveilut for a katan there. Let's turn the page and see still a couple more answers, two more answers that we have. The Pitkei Tshuva addresses the question, and he raises a technical consideration. He says, "Nired al kol panim yishnaf kuta dimitam chinuch leka ela kishiyish lahakatan av shechayav lechanucho b'mitzvot." We're just looking at the technicalities of the mitzvah chinuch. Mitzvah chinuch is who's got the obligation of chinuch? The child's father. A child who's got no father has got no din of chinuch. It's a father who has an obligation to educate his son. So therefore, if the father's passed away, so then there's no mitzvah of chinuch for the child to observe avilut. It's l'chora, it's incumbent upon the community as a whole and the relatives to make sure that the child gets a Jewish upbringing and a Jewish education and is introduced to mitzvah. But any specific mitzvah, there's no mitzvah, nobody has an obligation now to go and drag the child to bench lulav on Sukkot. It might be good that if all the other children in shul, their fathers are giving them a lulav to wave, that somebody else should give this child a lulav to wave as well, certainly. But midin chinuch, there's no absolute obligation. So therefore, he says in some cases there will be a mitzvah chinuch, and sometimes there won't. If there's no father, then there's no mitzvah chinuch. There's no mitzvah chinuch because there's nobody to be mechanechim. Final answer appears in the Chochmat Adam. The Chochmat Adam says, so we'll go from the brackets. So he says, for od nireli, da'al korche chen bo mitzvah chinuch. He's certain that there's no mitzvah chinuch. Share afilu biyom ha-kippurim mitarim bakol chutz min ilat ha-sandal. On Yom Kippur, children are allowed to do all the things which are generally prohibited for an adult on Yom Kippur, except for wearing shoes. V'tisha ba'av lo matzim sheyeh chayav l'chanech afilu bin ilat ha-sandal. Very interestingly, he says that on Tisha B'Av, you don't even have to stop your children wearing leather shoes. In my experience, my kids sort of love putting on the trainers or the Crocs, whatever, for when they were young, for Tisha B'Av. But there's no absolute necessity in the days where you've got one pair of shoes that's leather and it's got holes in. So you don't have to tell your child to walk on the cobbles without any shoes. The tzarich lomar de kevan de hushtavah sheish bo mishum tzar lo gashrinam betinok. Basically, the laws of avilut are things which are uncomfortable, distressing, painful, etc., etc. And therefore, Chazal never institute something midin chinuch where it's going to be distressing. So to have to go a whole week without washing, or have to go a whole week without being able to wear your shoes, it might be muddy, it might be cold, it might be stony, whatever it is. So Chazal never made such gezeiros. So what we see here is that a clear conclusion amongst the Achronim that even though there are dissenting voices, but a clear conclusion that there is no din of aveilut for a katan. There are a couple of perhaps exceptions. The din of saying Kaddish is not a din in aveilut particularly. The din of saying Kaddish is a way of bringing zechut to the neshama of the niftar. So there we say that a child under bar mitzvah does say Kaddish. In actual fact, Kaddish Yatom, the mourner's Kaddish in the tefillah, was instituted for mourners who are minors. They couldn't lead the tefillah from the amud, so therefore they were given a Kaddish to say at the end of tefillah. That was Kaddish Yatom, specifically for minors. So that clearly they do say. There's also discussion about things which are observances which go beyond Shloshim. So the Issur Simcha, things like that. Because why is it that there's Minhadin, Aveilut, only applies for 30 days? For parents, we say it applies for more than 30 days. That's a Din in Kibud Avvaim. So it might be, some poskim suggest, that anything which is midin kibud avvaim, so that applies even to a katan. Something which isn't a din in kibud av ha'ein doesn't apply to a katan. So there's a simcha which applies to the whole Yud Beit Chodesh, so that would apply also to a katan. You could argue and say that even though it's a din in kibud av ha'ein, essentially it's a din of ha'ilut, which is extended because of kibud av ha'ein. Therefore, you could argue that doesn't apply to a katan either. It's important to note that, you know, these issues need to be addressed with, you know, with great sensitivity. You know, on the one hand, you know, even if we say that, you know, a katan isn't chayv in avilut, that's, I don't think that it's, emotionally, healthy to say to the child, okay, you know, right, go to school for the whole week as if nothing's happened. It might be best that after a few days that the child does want to go back to school and, be with, their friends, and you know, such things, and, you know, be able to not be stuck in a Beit Avel. That's a very good opportunity that we have. There is no Kiyavav Avilut, and there's no reason why they shouldn't go to school if that's the right thing for them. But certainly in many cases it's not the right thing for them, just to shunt them off as if nothing has happened. So that balance needs to be got just right. And the same could be true even with regard to the din of Simcha throughout the year. You know, for some children who are able to engage well and have got the right emotional support, so they can't go to birthday parties for the year, they'll deal with that, and that will help them come to terms with their loss. In other cases, you'll find that you know, the family dynamics are so strained in any event that to tell them for a year they can't go to any parties, you know, it could be that, you know, their bar mitzvah year, they can't get to any of their friends' bar mitzvahs or whatever it is, that could mean, you know, massively traumatic for them, and could, you know, have a, you know, major impact on their whole emotional well-being, their whole religious well-being in the future, etc. So these cases need to be addressed very, very carefully. Let's now address a related question that the Shach referred us to in the Nekudot HaKesef. If you look in the Torah in Simon Shin Tzadik Vav, halfway down, he says as follows: Misha meit aviv o imo. So a person who loses a parent, or it could be any other relative, and he was a katan at that point in time, and that person became a gadol, became bar mitzvah, or bat mitzvah, within the shloshim. At Katav Haram Mirutenberg Shetzarikli Tabel Mishi Yagdil. So the Maharam says they have to observe Avilut from the time they reach the day of their bar mitzvah. It's, you know, a bit traumatic to think of. Everybody else has a party for their bar mitzvah, a suda, and this katan starts sitting shiva. Oh, they become bar mitzvah, they start sitting shiva. That's what the Maharam says. Ve'eino monem yom kfura. When you start counting the shiva and the shloshim from the day of the bar mitzvah, you count the first 7 days for shiva, the first 30 days for shloshim. Even if everybody else has finished shiva, you're sitting shiva by yourself, everybody else has finished shloshim, you know, whilst you're, you know, halfway through shiva, you carry on with shloshim even though everybody else is finished. But if the shloshim is over before you reach your majority, then there's no din of zayin and shloshim, and you observe the rest of the 12 months of avelut, which everybody else is observing, but you count it from the kavura just like everybody else. And if it's if you've got a month to go, then you just keep a month. If you've got 10 months to go, then you keep 10 months, whatever it is. So that's the view of the Maharam. V'adoni avi ha-rosh zal katav. However, the Rosh wrote, kevan shehu shaya katan b'shat kavura, seeing as he was a katan at the time of the burial, afilu higdil toch shloshim, or afilu toch zayin, even if he became bar mitzvah during the shiva or during shloshim, batel mimenu kol din avilut. The whole din of avilut is null and void. He doesn't observe avilut. So machloket Maharam and the Rosh. Now the Beit Yosef quotes the views and various Rishonim who side with each of them, and he says that I don't agree with the view of the Maharam, even though there are other Rishonim who hold like him. Tahai kaimelan halacha kavatrai. We've got a halachic principle, halacha kavatrai. that where you've got a machloket, and certainly if you're not sure of who the halakha should follow, halakha kvar try, we follow the later opinion. Why? Because we assume that the later opinion has greater knowledge. There's more things that he'll be aware of, and therefore is better placed to assess all the factors and to reach halachic conclusion. This would be a subject for its, you know, sharing its own right. Halacha kavat tra, you know, you always say, oh, you know, and you've got a machloket, that's the rabbi of Aleit Zion 10 years ago paskened whatever, but you know, I say differently, and halacha must be like me. Halacha kavat tra, that's it's obviously a bit more complex than that, but that's at least one factor here. And furthermore, the Kaimelan, we've got the principle halacha gidriah hamekel ba'evel, the way you've got a machloket in hilchot aveilut, we follow the view, which again could be a topic in its own right. In terms of that, means say any machloket, as long as you've got a lenient view, so then you'll just always end up with that, and you don't pay any attention to anything. Is that going to be always the deciding factor? In any event, the Beit Yosef, certainly combining those things and possibly with each of them by themselves, he says hilchach nakatina. We follow the Rosh that once the child has reached, if the child was not bar mitzvah at the time of the Ptira, so then there's no din of Avelut, that's even when they reach their adulthood.
Does no one suggest that it would be like a Yom Shavuah?
So that's exactly the point. We'll come to that momentarily. Let's just say the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like the Beit Yosef says, Paskins, that a Katan Shehigdil, that even if it's during Shiva, so the Levaya is the day before his Bar Mitzvah. I mean, that would be massively traumatic, but you know, that's, I'm sure things have happened. That the next day becomes a Gadol, he's got no din of Avelut. Now, let's turn the page and see at least part of the Rosh inside. The Rosh quotes the Machloket between himself and the Maharam Mirottenberg. And the Maharam is saying exactly like Jeffrey used to say. Let's see how he says it. That's because there will be a limitation. Even you said a Shmua,
Yom
Shmua. So importantly, there's a difference between Shmua Karova and Shmua Rechoka. That Shmua Karova is within 30 days, Shmua Rechoka is after 30 days. So certainly if it's after 30 days, then it's, yeah, there's no Avelut. I mean, even if you were an adult, there's Avelut for 1 hour. And we know to say that a person who lost a parent, you know, when they were 4 years old, when they reach adulthood, that they keep an hour of Avelut. That's, but in terms of Shmua Karova, so that would be, yeah, exactly the point. That's during Shloshim, they become a Gadol. Would it be like a Yom Shmua? And that's exactly what the Maharam Mirottenberg says. That's third line. He says, "V'havi kamisha shama Shmua Krova Beregel." Says it could be compared to the case of a person who hears Shmua Krova Beregel. That's on Yom Tov. So, you know, you get a message on Yom Tov that you've lost a relative. Shemi Tabel, and then the Levaya takes place on Yom Tov. Shemi Tabel alav achaha regel. So the Avelut starts, the Shiva starts after Yom Tov, u'monezayin shloshim, and you count 7 and 30 days. So this, the Maharam is saying, is comparable. You weren't able to observe the Avelut at the time when it should have really kicked in, but within 30 days you are able to. So then you observe Avelut in its fullness.
What's Shmua Krova and Shmua Rechoka?
Shmua Krova is when you hear about it within 30 days, and Shmua Rechoka is when you hear about it after 30 days.
Had about how the parents unfortunately died in the Holocaust. That's the Shmua Rechoka.
Shmua Rechoka.
I thought they said they do.
They keep Shiva just for Shachat. They do one act of Avelut. They sit briefly, take off their shoes. And then they stand up and they put their shoes back on.
Is that because it is Shabbat, or is it because it's one day and then you've got Mitzvah Sayom?
That's an interesting question. I think that it's just a din of Shachat. I don't think it's a din of Mitzvah Tayom. It might be. I don't know. It's a good question. That doesn't really impact on this, but it's still a good question. Okay, so that's the view of the Maharam. Now, there are a number of kashas on this, which the Maharam himself raises. That's the first kasha, is to say that there's a big difference between the two cases. In the case of Yom Tov, that some avilut is observed already on Chol HaMoed, that you don't have a haircut, that's on Chol HaMoed, that you don't wash your clothes. Now, it's true that you don't do those things because it's Chol HaMoed, that so even if you weren't an Avel, you wouldn't be doing those things. But manifestations of Avelut are practiced. So you're able to say that the Avelut was sort of observed, but it was, we had a relationship to it, since we didn't observe it properly until after Yom Tov. Whereas in the case of Katan, there's no manifestation of Avelut at all at the beginning. He's totally patur. And as the Maharam says, in the case of Yom Tov, really there's a chiyuv of Avelut immediately. It's just that Yom Tov prevents that. And there's Yom Tov, so we can't have Avelut. But really, if we could, and whatsoever we can, Dvarim Shebet Sinner, for example, we say do apply. However, with the Katan, there's no chiyuv of Avelut whatsoever. Those are issues which the Maharam himself raises. The Rosh raises further questions, and he says it's like a Ger Shenit Gayer or Katan Shenit Gadol between the two Pesachim. That's if we assume that Pesach Sheni is Tashlumin for the Rishon, so if you weren't Chayav for Pesach Rishon, then you're not going to be Chayav for Pesach Sheni. It's only in a case where you were Chayav in Pesach Rishon, you were Tamei, you were Derech Rechoka, so you can't observe Pesach Rishon, so you'll observe Pesach Sheni. But if you weren't Chayav the first time round, then you're not going to be Chayav the second time round. He says that is exactly the case that we're dealing with here. The Katan had no Chiyuv when the person died, so therefore he's got no chiyuv when he becomes the gadol as well, because it's tashlumin for subsequent avelut. It's always tashlumin for the avelut that should have been observed initially. And if you had no chiyuv to observe avelut initially, then he's got no chiyuv to observe avelut subsequently. Now, as I said, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rosh and says that katan shenit gadol doesn't observe avelut. The Bach and the Taz ask a big kasha on the Shulchan Aruch. They say, hold on a minute, if we look back in Simon Shin Mem Aleph, we've got a parallel machloket between the Rosh and the Maharam in Rutenberg. Simon Shin Mem Aleph is Hilchot Avelut. And there's a question, what happens? This is brought in the Rosh in third perek of Masechet Brachot Misha Meitor. What happens if a person's an Avel, an Onen on Shabbat? So there's no aninus on Shabbat. Of course, immediately Motzei Shabbat, they become an onen. An onen is a person who's lost a close relative, and they haven't yet had the levaya. An onen doesn't observe any positive mitzvot. So comes Motzei Shabbat, they don't make Havdalah. Now the question, the levaya is then on Sunday afternoon they have the levaya. Do they make Havdalah after the levaya? So this is a machloket between the Maharam and the Rosh. The Maharam says, yes, he does make Havdalah after the Levaya. That's the fact that he was Patur at the time doesn't make a difference. Still makes Havdalah afterwards. That's whereas the Rosh says, no, you were Patur at the time, the Ikazman of Havdalah, so therefore you don't make Havdalah later. So it seems to be an exact parallel machloket. However, the Mechaber there in Simin Shimem Aleph paskins there like the Maharam and says, and this is how we paskin the Maisa, and says that an Avel, that who was an Onen on Motzei Shabbat and make Havdalah, the first thing they need to do when they get home after the Levaya is to make Havdalah. So, you know, that's got enough going on in their minds, and you have to remind them, oh, when you get home, before you eat Sudat Havra, you have to make Havdalah. That's, so how is it that the Shulchan Aruch is in paskin in one case like the Maharam, and in the other case is paskening like the Rosh? So the Taz addresses it and says that it's that he disagrees actually with the Lomdus, both of the Maharam and the Rosh, and it's actually a different discussion which is going on. He says the reason why the Mechaber paskens in terms of Havdalah, that you make Havdalah even though you were Patur on Motzei Shabbat because you were an Onen, he says that's because in actual fact it's not that Havdalah on Sunday is Tashlumin for Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat. It's that Havdalah can be made any time between Motzei Shabbat and Tuesday evening. That's the time, or Tuesday afternoon. That's the time for Havdalah. You always want to make Havdalah as early as possible, so you make it Motzei Shabbat. If you didn't, it's still the original Chiyuv. So even though you were Patur on Motzei Shabbat, you're still going to be Chayev on after the Levaya on Sunday afternoon or Monday or Tuesday. As far as the Katan in our sugya is concerned, that's a different din. The point is that at the time of the Ikar Merirut, at the time when the Levaya took place, or the burial took place, and the notion of Avilut started, the Katan was Patur, and therefore he had no Shayachut to Avilut. And Avilut can only apply that if it's a follow-on from the Ikar Merirut, from that initial sense of shock and bereavement. And seeing as the child got a sense of shock and bereavement at the time of the time of the death, but wasn't able to fulfill Avilut there because he was a Katan, so 2 weeks later when he becomes a Gadol, he's just removed from that sense of shock and bereavement, and therefore doesn't observe Avilut. So that is the answer of the Taz to this question on the Mechaber, why in one case he paskins like the Maharam Rutenberg and the other like the Rosh. Ad Kan, we've got Mincha in about 5 minutes.